good evening and welcome to Tuesday's Late Debate. We're back. Joining us to debate today's developments, Darragh Cleary, Fianna Fáil TD for Mayo and spokesperson on social protection, Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin TD for Galway West South Mayo and spokesperson on public expenditure and reform, Kian O'Callaghan, Social Democrats TD for Dublin Bay North and spokesperson on housing, and Hugh O'Connell, political correspondent with Independent Newspapers. We want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, Housing Minister Dara O'Brien says his proposed affordable housing bill is the most comprehensive piece of legislation on affordable housing in the history of the state. He says it would deliver up to 6,000 affordable homes on state lands within 4 years and under the scheme. The bill is expected to see 50 homes completed in County Cork this year. Furthermore, 414 new cost rental tenancies will be in place this year, and there are also plans for a cost rental scheme. Darragh Cleary, will Darragh O'Brien be carried shoulder high into the next Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting?
Look, I think it's welcome that there's action. It's welcome that there's solid action that we can measure against. Particularly in the area of affordable housing. I'm happy to see local authorities getting into affordable housing. I'm happy to see the Part 5, part of the planning and development map being extended to affordable housing. I'm happy that he's made a commitment to two other things, to a new housing strategy, which he's going to publish in July, and also to a new planning and development bill, which will be published in September, to address a number of issues. So, for instance, the other issue that came up today about funds continuing to buy out housing issues. So he has shown massive energy and massive ambition since he went into the department. He is very much in touch with people around the country around this. And I think I'll just say well done to him and his team.
Very much in touch with people around the country, you say, but very, very much going against. Do you want me to read out the list of people who have expressed concerns about elements
of this bill? Expressions of concern, and he's taken some of them on board in terms of this bill. There's expressions of concern by the SRI, because the scheme was
Robert Watt, former Secretary General of the Department of Expenditure, the Central Bank, the SRI. I think I did see a story some while ago that a group of Fine Gael councillors had an issue with.
Were particularly focused on the scheme, and what the Minister has done is he's come up with a very targeted scheme in terms of the affordable housing section, in terms of the shared equity scheme. It's targeted, it's a shared equity scheme.
Is that not just smoke and mirrors, though, Darragh Cleary? I mean, you're throwing €75 million into a housing market that is completely
a housing market where the current mortgage market, Katie, is worth €11 billion. So €75 million in that context is relatively small. And €75 million will give people a chance to get into that housing market that otherwise may not have the chance. So,
What will it do for the house prices for other people who are queuing up for houses?
Well, we were accused a lot of this around the Help to Buy scheme, and that's left 20,000 people in to buy houses that otherwise may not have had the chance.
The Help to Buy scheme was strongly criticised, was it not, for giving money to a huge number of people who got money, already had their deposits in the Help to Buy scheme, so that drove up prices as well.
20,000 people use the scheme to buy a house that they may not have otherwise. Not all of the 20,000 people have the money in advance. And the other issue, Katie, is what this will do is it will drive supply. So supply is the biggest issue. It will encourage people to actually build houses. And the more supply we have, that is the biggest problem.
OK, Mairead, you're trying to get in.
Look, I think this is simply a gift to developers, this shared equity scheme. We're seeing €75 million basically being pumped into developers. It's nothing in terms of affordability. We're seeing a cap of 400,000 in Galway, where I'm from, 450,000 in the likes of Dublin. That simply isn't affordable for people. What we want to see is that €75 million actually being pumped into the councils and the affordable housing bodies to actually deliver affordable housing for people. I mean, this is cuckoo land stuff, these kind of huge figures. We know that the ESRI have said that they think it'll be inflationary, as have the Central Bank. We've seen a similar scheme in Britain where it has proven to be inflationary. So I think there's huge concern in relation to this. And I think that really what the government and what the minister should be doing is pumping that €75 million into local authority housing.
That scheme That scheme in the UK increased supply by 14% and increased inflation by 1%.
Well,
that's,
no, that's not true. Yeah,
that's not true.
That's the scheme. It was a 5% increase in London as per a study by the London School of Economics, and no increase in supply.
But the UK Audit Office, independent audit office.
Have you read that report, actually?
Yes.
Have you? Because that's not what the report says. The report says that there's a price premium of 1% when someone buys an identical home, a first-time buyer, and they buy a home under this scheme, that report says they pay a price premium of 1%. Doesn't say that's price inflation. In fact, prices increased over the 4 years after this scheme was introduced in the UK, prices increased by 42%. Now, not entirely because of the scheme, would have only been one of the reasons for it, but it was inflationary. And actually, in those same 4 years, we saw the profits of the largest developers in the UK, their share prices increased by 230%. Off the back of this scheme. And that's why developers here lobbied heavily for this scheme. There wasn't a mention of this scheme last year in the general election. Fianna Fáil, Dara O'Brien were not talking about it at all. It was after the election when developers lobbied for it that all of a sudden this scheme came out of nowhere. And in fact, the promises that were made by Dara O'Brien in the last general election was for 10,000 direct build affordable homes each year in government, in addition to 10,000 social
and
homes.
He's also,
that's what he, and where are those 10,000?
He's announced
where
that, are those that 10, scheme. That scheme is getting underway today as well. That's
we've been told there's going to be 50 homes this year.
Because this year is a year that's being knocked, but the schemes are getting underway, including one in your own area, Dublin, in Dunemer, as a good start.
It's in the minister's constituency.
He wants to change the scheme to make it more user-friendly, and you've houses there up to 265,000 in Lusk. So that's a start. It's a very small start.
What we were promised in the election was 50,000 affordable homes, direct build, and the minister today was saying maybe 6,000, and was then very vague on the delivery of it.
I think he'll get up to that stage. He's made the point today that the existing scheme is cumbersome and he wants to change it, and today marks the start of those changes.
Okay, I want to bring in Orla Hegarty, Assistant Professor at UCD School of Architecture and Planning. Orla, you've been looking at this bill.
I have, yes. I mean, I think it's worth looking back at the origins of this because then we can see where it has come from. The National Economic and Social Council did a lot of work over 2 years looking at what they call the dysfunction in the housing market. And that's the boom and bust cycles we're used to, where people were, you know, paying too much and then plunged into negative equity. And we had that cycle of building too much and then building too little. So what they were proposing was that we re-engineer the housing market, that we start to develop housing in a way that is more based on the cost and that affordability is engineered into the system. They also said then that the cost rental system scheme should be at scale. It should be on favourable terms with access to land, but importantly be in public ownership at affordable rents. Now, that's the origins of a lot of the thinking on this, but what actually has developed from it isn't a re-engineered system, it's a subsidy to the existing system. And the difficulty with subsidising a system is that it's finite. Depending on how much money is available, it's not scalable. So if, as looks the case, people in the Dublin market could be having a shared equity, so a piece of it that they'll have to pay sometime in the future of 100,000, that's effectively a second mortgage or a second charge on that property that will have to be paid at some stage in the future. It doesn't engineer in affordability for them. It just engineers in debt in a different way.
Yeah, I'm going to bring in Hugh O'Connell as well. Hugh, what's the feeling around Leinster House in relation to this this scheme at this stage? Because there was a sense that it was maybe a dead duck some time ago because of the scale of the opposition to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dara O'Brien, I suppose, has achieved something in the fact that he's managed to get it through government, given the level of opposition there was to it. I mean, the SRI, the Central Bank, the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, and Fine Gael. And Fine Gael councillors, as you referenced earlier, were all coming out against it. Now, he argued at the time that they were coming out against the idea based on, you know, the evidence from other countries, and that he was going to respond to those concerns and tailor the bill, to reflect that those concerns. But yeah, as we're hearing tonight, there remain some concerns about the legislation, and I think that, you know, ultimately, while he'll get this through and into law by virtue of the fact that the government has a majority, it won't stop the critics. And I suppose ultimately he will be judged by the effectiveness of the scheme and whether it has an impact on affordability. But, you know, one of the things that struck me, Katie, was that Dara O'Brien, in the time that I've been doing this job, which is nearly a decade now, is the fourth housing minister who's come out, you know, with a new scheme that's going to address kind of the core issue, which is affordable housing, and, you know, make housing more affordable for people, you know, on relatively good incomes, people kind of in their 30s who haven't been able to get on the housing ladder. And, you know, basically successive governments have been at this now for the best part of a decade and haven't managed to solve the issue. And I think that's enormously frustrating for voters up and down the country. And I think that will ultimately, you know, that's where this will fall whenever it comes to an election time. But certainly I don't think there's any sense amongst the electorate right now that what Dara O'Brien is doing is necessarily any better than what some of his predecessors did. And there is certainly a belief, I guess, that once again, here is a government kind of, I suppose, formulating legislation on the basis of what some of the private sector would prefer and what developers would prefer. And it's hard to get away from that charge. When you see all the evidence and all of the criticism of this bill and where it's coming from, you know.
Let me put that to Dara Cleary. Like, this is the persistent charge that has dogged Fine Gael and is now dogging Fianna Fáil. Would have historically dogged Fianna Fáil very much going back to the Galway Tent days, is that you are led by what? These are policies that are being put forward and driven by developers.
So if we were led by developers, we wouldn't be increasing the Part 5 element in terms of increasing the availability of affordable housing and of social housing. You know, we're pushing local authorities to get back into the bill, to get back building themselves directly.
Do you really think this policy is going to sort us out?
I think it's a good start. It's by no means the panacea. It's not the silver bullet. Sorting this out, I think. But if you look at all the things that Dara O'Brien has done in terms of the LDA, I think that has the potential in terms of freeing up state land to do that. And I do think one thing I will agree with Keane on is the model, the Ocúlán model, which I think is developing Dúnemer as well as the original model in Ballymun. That is the model. If we can get that model replicated, and I think with the investment in the Land Development Authority, we can begin to do that in cities and in towns around the country.
Orla Hegarty, you have some concerns about what's being done with the Land Development Authority.
Well, I think, again, people need to read a lot into the detail of what's being proposed with the LDA. But it is, I suppose, what was envisaged originally was more a land management agency, that the land in public ownership would be put on a register and it would be clear what was owned, and that we could lever that then to get some affordability into the market. How it's developed is as a land development agency, so as an agency that will do development deals with developers on large parcels of state land, so taking them out of public ownership effectively and into private ownership with some dividends back in the future. So it's a pretty high risk model. It's also quite remote from control of government to know, you know, what's going on and what deals are being done and whether good value for money is being achieved. I think it also misses an opportunity really to regrow a native Irish development sector, which was decimated in the crash of the smaller developers in the construction industry, who really are the backbone of the house building industry and who haven't been helped at all to come out of the crash and to re-establish. If we could spread the money around more into seed funding in SME developers and break up the lands that the LDA are taking on, I think it would be a lot quicker and a lot better value for money in terms of the development.
Yeah, Cian O'Callaghan.
Yeah, and just to, a very good point about smaller builders and smaller developers. And one of the things that they found in the UK, for example, with the shared equity scheme there that the government is proposing to bring in here, is that it squeezed out smaller developers and smaller builders. And that means, you know, you've less competition, your prices go up. But just on Dara's point in terms of Part 5 and, you know, are developers shaping housing policy in Ireland? I absolutely think they are. The shared equity scheme, for example, isn't. No one was proposing it in Ireland apart from developers and their representatives. No one else has defended it, not a single commentator outside of the property industry. But just Part 5 itself. Part 5, as it stands, is actually a reasonably good deal for developers. And one of the things that's happening at the moment is we're seeing a shift away from acquisitions to this long-term leasing under Part 5, where the state effectively pays off the mortgage or the build cost of a home over a period of 25 years. And at the end of that, having paid that full cost,
the developer still owns the home, and then the social housing tenants can be evicted at that stage, or the state can renew the agreement for another 25 years. That's an exceptionally good deal for developers and suits them particularly well. So I don't accept that Part 5 is actually a really good example of a policy being imposed on developers they don't like. It's quite advantageous. They immediately know there's going to be, they'll be able to sell or lease 10% of their homes, and they can actually leverage finance off the basis of that guarantee as well.
I'll just give you a sense of what listeners are saying in relation to this. We have a texter here. Affordable houses, a third of a million up to half a million. This is crazy, far too expensive. Another one, affordable housing, cost rental model. Why can't they build public housing? People are up to their neck in debt. We need to stop playing the same record. That's from Paul Dorn. That's from the Clondalkin Public Housing Group. I worked on this scheme in Dublin City Council 20 years ago, says Brian in Meath. It's a mess, adding more debt onto mortgages. And one here, and this is, we want to move on to this now. Ban vulture funds from buying residential property. We're a laughing stock, inviting foreign investors in to compete with our citizens and local authorities, then rent them back to us at exorbitant rents. They're banned in Germany and New Zealand. Because that, of course, is the other big story on the housing area today. This revelation in the Business Post that an international investment fund, Roundhill Capital, bought up more than three quarters of the homes in a new residential development in Maynooth in County Kildare. Mairead.
Yeah, look, I think this was really galling for people to read at the weekend. And even now when we're talking about these affordable, so-called affordability for people who are now forced to live at home and that, and we're seeing, as some of the texters there saying, up to nearly, you know, half a million, 400,000 in my own home place. That's just simply not affordable for anyone. And again, it locks out, especially single people out of the market. But in relation to this, I mean, this was particularly galling for people, and it is in relation to the tax code, and it was something that we had put forward during the finance bill as well. We had put forward amendments, but the reality is with these investment firms is that they don't pay capital gains tax, they don't pay corporation tax, and they don't pay any tax on their rent roll, and that needs to be changed. So what we do need is we need to remove these tax exemptions. It shouldn't be a situation that they can profit off this. People are really, really struggling. And it's something needs to be done about it, because we have a situation now where so many people, I'm in my 30s, so many people in their 30s are living at home now with their parents because they simply cannot afford the rents, and they cannot afford, they definitely cannot afford to buy. So that's something that really needs to be dealt with. But this particularly, that really hit home at the weekend for an awful lot of people.
It did. Dara, some of your colleagues have been out on Twitter saying they're shocked. Lisa, your constituency colleague, Lisa Chambers, saying it was shocking, something needed to be done. You are in government.
Yeah, and it shouldn't have happened. And there's more. Harry McGee is breaking something in the Irish Times tonight that this fund have bought further properties in Dublin. What we are going to do is Dara Brian is going to bring in restrictions in the Planning Development Bill. I think there also needs to be changes to take the tax advantages that Mairead has identified out of it as well.
But as Mairead said, they brought forward those amendments for the last finance bill, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael voted against them.
Well, look, we're in government, so you got to we'll deal with this on a government basis. So it's two pronged on the Planning Development Bill, bringing in changes to Part 5 and keen suggestions in terms of the long term ratios are something that I certainly will pursue. This should be. Any Part 5 allocations should be in state ownership, and that's something I certainly
will you support our bill on Thursday then on this?
Well, look, we'll support government Part 5 leasing. A constructive approach to it. But no, there needs to be changes in this area. In these funds, these so-called cuckoo funds, we need to restrict them. They should not be able to do this. It's worth saying, though, Katie, they only represent 5% of the residential market at the moment. But that's still 5% too much for my view.
Especially given the fact that so many people just simply can't afford it, and then they see this kind of thing where it's literally so clearly profit driven and of no benefit to people who are stuck with their parents and never going to be able to totally locked out of the housing market.
Can I ask Orla, is there an issue though? I heard Tom Parlin earlier on Drive Time saying that a lot of houses and developments would not actually be underway right now were it not for the funding that's coming from these investment funds, because they're the people who can get the cheap money at this stage.
Well, I've heard that argument, but I don't agree with it, because in fact, what they've done is they've inflated the market to unbelievable levels, which has made it unaffordable. And although people speak a lot about it being a supply crisis, it's really an affordability crisis. There are people in housing where the problem is money. We obviously need new housing, but if it's not affordable, it's not really of use to anybody.
But if
and
it's just
high subsidies, it's not of use.
Sorry, Orla, but if what Dara Kaliri was saying there, that it's just 5% of the market.
I think he might be talking about the entire sales market, but it's a substantial proportion of the new build sector that's been bought both by the state for social housing in bought in private schemes through local authorities and approved housing bodies, and by international investors. In fact, the first time buyer market is a very small, compared to what it used to be historically. So I think it has skewed the market. It's worth remembering that at the start of Rebuilding Ireland 5 years ago, when the Department of Housing started working with developers to change legislation and change standards, the target was to be building and selling apartments in Dublin from the private sector between 200 and 260,000. Now, that's only 5 years ago. And that same sector in that time has gone from a target of 260,000 now to it being 450,000 for a two-bedroom apartment. So it's been hugely inflationary. And you can see that the prices being sought in Dublin are not in line with the construction costs. They're considerably in excess of anything outside the Dublin area. So I think these funds have been hugely inflationary in the market.
And we saw those other stories in the Business Post. Business Post were doing great work in this area in recent weeks, talking about some funds who are doing little side deals with some of their tenants, so that the headline figure for their rent stays the same and doesn't affect the long term profitability of the development, but in order to keep tenants in the apartments, they're basically getting under the counter discounts. So huge issues around that.
That has been reported, yeah, where people are getting a free month or two so that it doesn't appear as a drop in rent. There's also a very significant issue with vacancy in a lot of these new build-to-rent blocks in Dublin, where units or apartments that are maybe two-bedroom apartments for 2,100 or more rent are being held vacant. And there's high vacancy in some of these new blocks, even after a year or two after they're complete. So it's clear that these investors can hold tight for higher rents, and whereas a lot of smaller landlords in the market will drop the rent to pay their own mortgage, the funds can keep high rents in a particular area.
Yeah, I'm just looking at what's coming in again on the text line and email. The government need to stop vulture renters buying up estates. It's been done elsewhere, from Alec Quinn. The dominance of REIT investors and housing co-ops in the housing market needs to be stopped. Families should not be blocked from affordable housing ownership by dominance. Affordable housing supply is the key issue. Michael Davitt must be spinning in his resting place. It says, Cian O'Callaghan, what's to be done about this? Is this, how do we tackle it? Should there be a ban? Do we still need that money coming in? Would it have, as Dara O'Brien said this morning, unforeseen consequences in terms of future development?
See, I think there's no issue with having private investment in terms of building homes that are available then for sale. But the problem with these funds and the tax treatment is it encourages them to come in and keep ownership of the homes. And effectively, we're creating a model where they calculate their returns on what return they can get over 40, 50 years from building a home, renting it out, and the rental returns. And bearing in mind the rents, for example, in an apartment in Dublin now are higher than in any other European Union city. And that's the kind of situation that's been created. So the return that an investment fund can get on that, coupled with the fact that they're paying virtually no tax, which is something that was brought in by previous government but has been supported by Fianna Fáil. And this isn't an entirely new situation. I mean, in 2019, Construction Industry Federation said that 95% of new build apartments were going to institutional investors. So this isn't, it's now breaking into...
That is staggering, isn't it? 95%
of new build apartments. And this is now spilling over into housing estates. And it's not just out in Maynooth. We've seen exactly the 112 houses in Bay Meadows and Dublin 15 being sold off to the same investment fund. Marlott recently announced that they were selling 2,000 apartments over six sites in a €1 billion portfolio. We've seen 435 homes, apartments out in Ashdown a couple of weeks ago being announced that they're being sold off to a German investment fund. A German investment fund that can't buy up apartments or homes in Germany because... the government and the politicians in Germany, when they were bringing in these REITs there, decided we'd keep the REITs out of homes and apartments. And yes, they could invest into commercial property, but not into those. And just to make this point, what is happening in terms of whether there's vacancy or there's inflated rates or high market valuations being artificially kept up is an investor knows that if they can't rent out all their apartments on the market at that level, they know they can go to the state and do a long-term lease on the empty units. And we also know from Freedom of Information documents that I got back that it, certainly in some cases, the state hasn't insisted on an independent valuation to determine what those market rates are or those market rents, and instead they've relied on a valuation that's been given by the developer or their agents. I mean, that is absolutely indefensible. The state is a huge purchaser of homes and signing up these leases and everything else, and not to do an independent valuation. I mean, how can they possibly justify that?
So look, we have the minister said that the planning development bill, he's going to revise it in September. It'll deal with this. We also have he's going to be publishing a new housing strategy.
How will it deal with this?
Well, he's open to ideas. He proposed legislation himself in 2019 around restricting their ability. Increasing Part 5 will affect these operations
as well.
Yeah, but
even if you brought Part 5 up to 20-25%, a fund like that could still come in and snap up the other three quarters of it.
Well, and look, you've got to look at the tax treatment as well to make it unattractive for them to do that. So we have...
It just strikes me that it's extraordinary that we are at this stage, you know, given what we know, given that anybody could see it coming, really, if all the money and the return is in rental, the rental sector now, as we know it is, that's where the big investment funds are going to go.
And we're going to look at that, Katie, in September. Dara Ryan is 10 months in office. He's done substantial work in terms of the LDA, in terms of affordable housing, in terms of cost rental, in terms of dealing with all of the various parts of this situation. And I think he's showed huge activity. He has said he will deal with it, and I have absolutely no doubt he will.
But as I said earlier, like, we did put in amendments to this into the finance bill in relation to this, and this has been something that my colleague Piers Dardy has been doing year after year, so it's not something new. Why hasn't the government supported this? Dara is saying that the minister will look at it come September. It's not something new. It should have been dealt with. The government should have supported these amendments, and that's simply the fact of the matter.
And the minister is indicating that come September he may introduce some sort of 20%, 30% of new build schemes being reserved for first-time buyers. And that seems to indicate that he thinks that, you know, maybe having 60% bought out by these funds to be rented out is what he's aspiring to. And is that the signal that the government are giving in terms of home ownership for, you know, a small minority home ownership and the rest to be stuck in this kind of rental trap?
Yeah, let's just give me that. Just in relation to that, we've an email came in to us from Kate. Is it not possible to subsidise the buyer by way of a deposit to buy second-hand homes? Why are all subsidies only directed at new builds? We're stuck in the rental market at 50 and 70 working for the landlord. And that, of course, is going to be a huge issue coming down the tracks for people. If they're paying these extraordinary rents, mm-hmm. No way to save for a house, stuck in the rental, private rental sector, you know, come your pension, come 65, where is the money going to come to keep a roof over your head?
That's why we want to try and get people back into the housing market. Our housing ownership level has fallen to below the EU average. We want to put in incentives to help people buy, but also incentives to drive supply. And that's what today is about, is actually driving supply to increase the availability to people.
But Katie,
if you were to... And Kate's email there about... second-hand properties being eligible. If we were to do that, we'd be accused of driving prices in that market as well. Certainly, I think in a lot of rural areas, there is second-hand houses are the options that are available for people. And I'd like to see the schemes expanded at times to do that. But I'm told, no, that'll drive prices. So this will drive supply. One of the key challenges in recent years has been, as well as first-time buyers, for families trying to move to the family home, there's huge difficulties there as well in terms of supply of that kind of house. There needs to be attention paid to that as well, so that families who may be still in the first house they bought as maybe couples starting off, that they can move into a family home that then gives people access to those houses. So there's a lot of parts of this jigsaw. I think in fairness, in 10 months, Dara O'Brien has done a lot of work, but there's a huge, huge amount of work to do in this area.
But there is an elephant in the room here as well, and that's the huge high cost of rent. So those people who are renting simply cannot afford to save in order to be able to, you know, try and get one of these cheap 400,000 euro homes.
There's a Sinn Féin private members bill going forward to the Dáil tomorrow
being, you know, proposed by my colleague Eoin O'Brien, and that would see a 3-year ban on rent increases. Rent is too high. We have a situation in Galway, where I'm from, that, you know, rent is increasing by over 5%. We also have a proposal in this that there would be a refundable tax credit that would effectively put a month's rent back into renters' pockets. Like, these things, we need to actually actively deal with the fact that people are struggling to pay their rents. It's simple as that, right? People are struggling to pay their rents. And if they can pay their rents, there's no way that they're able to also save for a mortgage. It's just simply out of reach for people. And that's just not good enough. So, well, my question would be is why the government isn't supporting this. This is something that we had also
Cabinet announced this evening that you would put forward your own counter motion.
And as, you know, as I said, we're publishing a new housing strategy in July. Dara O'Brien's committed to that today. You know, we're very aware, we're not immune to the pressures on renters.
So the new housing strategy, is this a completely new housing strategy?
But Dara, Fianna Fáil were in a confidence and supply agreement with Fianna Gael for 4 years, and at no point was there anything really done to help renters. And that issue that Mairead Farrell raised there, which I think is really a really massive issue for an awful lot of people of her generation and my generation, which is that paying exorbitant rents completely hampers your ability to save for a deposit to buy a house. And equally, you know, paying this exorbitant rent does nothing with regard to making you eligible for finance, really. I mean, it goes some way towards it with some financial institutions, but there's no kind of government directive on that. And I mean, that's another massive issue, I think. And that's another reason why people are locked out of the housing market. Another reason why, as Dara O'Brien identified quite a while ago, levels of home ownership in this country have fallen dramatically. But, you know, what I'd say to that is that Fianna Fáil, you know, had the opportunity to push these kind of issues in confidence and supply and really didn't get anywhere. I mean, one of the things you said earlier was that we were going to try and encourage local authorities to do more, you know, in terms of construction. But, like, I remember Barry Cowan saying that 3 years ago, and nothing happened.
Yeah, okay.
One of the key things that happened was the Strategic Site and Infrastructure Fund. That was something that we secured under confidence and supply. That has put a lot of the infrastructure in place in sites that we can now start building
In North Dublin, there was
It's the Dúmimar project, but it's based on the Ocúlán model, which I think is one worth pursuing and one worth following. But because
and,
of
and
the
needs
investment,
to be done on scale.
I was going to say, why aren't we scaling up the Ocúlán model? Because I know if you talk to Hugh Brennan, he will say that he can scale up if he's given
the model. Why are we putting 50 million? But you scale it up because the investments in things like the Strategic Infrastructure Fund, you've put the resources in place and then invite local authorities to get involved in it. That was one of the achievements of confidence.
Instead of putting 75 million into the shared equity scheme, that should all be put into scaling up the Ocúlán model so we can get genuinely affordable homes for people.
Okay, we're going to leave that. Before we leave it, I want to give the last word to Orla Hegarty. What would be the number one policy move that you would like to see happening to change the direction of this, Orla Hegarty?
I think the number one move is to find affordability actually in related to what people earn. Affordability has been redefined in this bill and in the LDA bill to an extent as a percentage reduction of the market price. And that's not really solving the problem for anybody, but it's also making it very risky in terms of market fluctuations. So I think the absolute key thing is to define affordability related to what people actually earn and then to provide houses at that level so that the vast majority of people, and this is possible to do with the cost of construction, so that the vast majority of people can meet their own housing need.
Okay. Orla Hegarty, many thanks for joining us tonight. We'll let you go and we'll take a break. But after this, we'll be talking about drink. And we don't have a break, do we? I'm having people... There isn't a break. Okay, we'll go straight to the talk about drinks. So, because today, of course, the Cabinet signed off on the plan by Health Minister Stephen Donnelly to introduce a minimum unit price for alcohol products. The measure will come into effect on the 1st of January 2022. So after this, a can of beer can't be sold for less than €1.32. A bottle of wine must cost at least €7.75, while a bottle of spirits can't be sold for under €20. Derek Leary, do you welcome this?
Yes, actually, we're nearly 10 years. It's 10 years next year since this bill was first proposed. It is being was introduced in 2015 by then Marcella Corcoran Kennedy. Did a massive amount of work to try and bring it through when she was there. It will be challenging, absolutely. But, you know, Katie, 2,700 people died because of alcohol-related deaths in Ireland in 2019. This has worked in Scotland. And if we apply the same principles to this that have applied in Scotland, we can reduce that by 500 deaths. That's 500 families. And, you know, in the course of this bill, I've dealt with some of those families. I've met them. I've met with families of some young people who lost their lives. And, yeah, they drive me on to see this bill works. I know it's challenging for retail, very challenging for retail, particularly in the border. But
yeah, this the timing has become the issue now. Yeah,
when you sit with the families and you speak to them, you hear of them, and some of them, I think you have spoken to them. It drives me on. And we've been saying timing for some time now. We couldn't do it in 2018. We couldn't do it in 2019. The Northern Executive, it's not going to happen until after the Assembly elections. So that'll be at least 2023. And ideally, I think we should be doing everything in Ireland on an all-Ireland basis, on health in particular, on a lot of issues. But on health, COVID has shown we should be doing. And ideally, you would do it on an all-Ireland basis, but we can't wait.
Mairead Farrell.
I do think that it would be very important that now we work as hard as we can to try and get this rolled out on an all-Ireland basis. I think it would be very, very important up to January 1st. I know that the Health Minister, the DUP Health Minister, Robin Swan, has said that it would be post an election. But I think an Assembly election, I do think that we need to do everything that we can to ensure that it is rolled out on an all-Ireland basis.
But is Sinn Féin going to be supportive of this?
Absolutely.
Even if Northern Ireland
we have always been supportive in relation to this, but we do think it should be rolled out on an all-Ireland basis. That's the clear approach. We now have a time frame up until January 1st, so let's do everything we can. Let's have the two health ministers work closely together. We've unfortunately not seen that in terms of COVID, but what we need to do is now is ensure that the two health ministers work as closely as possible, because what we want to see and what needs to happen is that this needs to be rolled out on an all-Ireland basis.
Kino Callan.
Yeah, I think certainly looking to get that alignment is certainly a good objective to go for. Look, there are good public health benefits to this measure, and they are laudable. This certainly won't be popular with a lot of people. It will be, challenging, especially for people on lower incomes. And I think every policy has to be looked at, in terms of what public health benefits you have, also how it impacts on lower incomes. I think it will. The prices for some people will be, if you're trying to make your ends meet, yeah, and you just don't have spare capacity, it is going to be a challenge. With that said, there's billions each year spent in this country in terms of our health service, in terms of criminal justice issues caused by alcohol. So this does need to be tackled. This is one of only a range of measures that need to be taken around alcohol. Minimum pricing is only part of the answer on this. And shouldn't just be done in isolation. We do have significant issues in this country that need to be addressed around alcohol.
Mark McSharry, your colleague, Derek O'Leary, has written to the Taoiseach and party colleagues to warn against pressing ahead when Northern Ireland hasn't gone ahead with this move, saying that for the government to be even remotely considering such a move amid the early post-Brexit months and the COVID crisis displays a breathtaking lack of appreciation for the current and future outlook for retailing in Ireland, and particularly the border counties. I think that was your story, Hugh, was it?
Yeah, that's right. I wrote about minimum unit pricing, this memo coming in a few weeks ago in the Sunday Independent, or 2 weeks ago in the Sunday Independent, that the government wanted to move ahead with it as quickly as possible, and that prompted a bit of a backlash from TDs along the border, which I reported on at the weekend. The likes of Joe McHugh in Donegal You know, Cavan Monaghan, Fianna Fáil TDs, Niamh Smith and Brendan Smith as well, just raising concerns about the fact that this was moving ahead without the North doing it simultaneously, which had been the stated intention in the programme for government. So, you know, Joe McHugh was pointing out this effectively is a breach of the programme for government. And I think one of the concessions they might have achieved, or certainly the, I suppose the agreement of government today, was to delay this legislation until, or rather the introduction of minimum unit pricing until January of next year. Because the concern for border TDs is that once you drive people across the border for cheaper drink, that they will
do their shop
there. That they, and particularly around Christmas, if they're going over the border for cheaper drink, they might do all their Christmas shopping there. So I suppose it's kind of giving those retailers along the border a chance to recover, given some of them have been closed, obviously, for several months now, and are going to be reopening later this month, but also to kind of give them, I suppose, the Christmas period as well.
But mind you, if we're talking about it, supermarkets that are you know, going to take the hit in relation to this, isn't it?
And surely
supermarkets, I was listening to our business news this morning telling us that take-home grocery spend is up 19.4% compared to pre-pandemic times. So surely if there was a time where there was a bit of a cushion there for this,
sector. The big multiples have done well, and the big multiples, the big international multiples in particular, have actually exploited a lot of the alcohol legislation in the fact that the pubs are closed, the on-trade is closed, they've been doing these offers, the multi-pack offers have stopped, use of cards for alcohol has stopped. I would say when we were discussing the programme for government this time last year, the expectation at that stage was that the Northern Ireland executive would act in 2021 on minimum unit pricing, and that's how the commitment was framed. But I think certainly right is right. We need to engage. It's done on an all-island basis. There is an opportunity,
but it's not being done on an all-island basis. That's the point.
In tandem with ourselves, and there's actually a lot to be gained in terms of the health of the population, and the concerns of my colleagues of all parties along the border are genuine, but they can be resolved if the Northern Ireland executive takes the same step.
But they're not going to do it. I mean, Robin Swan has made it, and this is one of the reasons why the government here is pushing ahead with it. Robin Swan made very clear to Minister of State for Public Health Frank Fian in a meeting in February that he wasn't going to do it before the end of his mandate, which runs to 2022, or at the moment it does anyway. And so the expectation is that the North won't move on this at the earliest until 2023. I mean, I think one of the other things as well, Katie, we should point out is that some of the criticism of this, you know, is that this is targeting people with lower incomes who have, you know, less disposable income and do buy cheap drink because it's all they can afford. And now you're pushing up the price of that. And I suppose there's a discussion to be had about that and why the government is pressing ahead with a measure that would disadvantage them when it comes to buying alcohol.
Well, I think that's been answered by the public health people who have put forward this idea, is that it's that end of the market where the most damage is done in terms of heavy drinking.
I think what we really need to avoid here is a scenario, do everything that we can, is to avoid a scenario where alcohol is cheaper in one jurisdiction than it is in the other. And, you know, especially when we're now, I suppose, first of all, at the moment, we're still, you know, very much.
It sounds like that ship has sailed, Maurice. I mean,
I don't think so. I think that the government needs to do everything that they can to engage with Robin Swan on this issue. I think that's very important. But we also obviously need to understand that there will be concerns among businesses. And I think Dara made the point that, you know, there's been a severe impact on businesses over the last year as a result of COVID-19. And they, you know, they don't want to see another impact, you know, being over the next coming months. The other thing is obviously as well is hopefully come January next year, but I think we thought this time last year that January the following year we'd be out of this. You know, we don't want to have a situation either where we're encouraging people to travel, you know, when at a time of a public health pandemic. But I do think the government needs to do everything they can to ensure that we don't have a situation where alcohol is much cheaper.
The Northern Ireland executive needs to state why it doesn't want to move. Just because one minister says he doesn't want to move, I think the Assembly needs to say that it wants to move in the interest of the public health of Northern Ireland.
Absolutely, and we'll do everything that we can, but it is also up to the Minister for Health to engage with Robin Swan on this issue. And
well,
we've had a situation...
And he said that he wouldn't do it.
But he needs to continue to engage. We now have a situation up to January. You know, it's not good enough to simply say, I've tried and I'll leave it there. He needs to continue to engage up to January next year, because it just, it would be concerning then if there was, we need to avoid that scenario where in one jurisdiction it's much cheaper than in another.
Just a couple of texts in on that. Why not ban alcohol advertising and alcohol companies' sponsorship of sports? Cheap alcohol is not the cause of alcoholism. This is avoiding the issue and bringing in a measure that favours the well-off. I have another textress here saying, I was no angel in my younger days, but every visit to an Aldi or off licence I've had in the last few years, I witnessed barely of age young fellas attempting to buy vodka in one aisle and the other guy getting the orange juice. Lunchtime yesterday, ! Get them back on the beer at least. We will leave that one there because I want to move on to Dublin Bay South. Because, of course, the sudden departure of the former Housing Minister, Eoghan Murphy, means that we can look forward to the mother of all by-election battles for his seat in Dublin South. By-elections are unpredictable, Dara.
Yeah, that's the joy of them.
Unless you're the Director of Elections.
I've done that and I lost a lot of hair over it, pulling it out. They're unpredictable because I think where you have one by-election, it becomes the entire focus. And where, you have 40 whatever different contests during a general election, one area gets a lot of focus. This area, because of where it is and because where we are tonight here in the deepest bowels of RTE, which is right in the middle of Dublin Bay South, will get a lot of attention. There's only one constituent. I'm not sure where you're living, Katie, but I know Hugh is a constituent of Dublin Bay South, so there will be a lot of attention given to it. Plus the fact, seriously, it's the first by-election of this stall term. And also, depending on the timing, and Fine Gael get to move that writ, we'll see, will it be run over 2 days, one day, depending on the COVID side. So we'll actually get to see how an election runs. But I know we have a very good organisation, Dublin Bay South. Jim O'Callaghan has worked incredibly hard as the local TD.
He'd love to have another Fianna Fáil TD in there with him, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. Jim's a team player and we've got two excellent councillors in Deirdre Conroy and Clare O'Connor, and we've possibly other contenders within the organisation. And I look forward to getting back out on the doors of Dublin Bay South some stage this year, if we're allowed.
I wonder, will there be any?
Hopefully.
Do you think we could possibly be door knocking by October?
We can. There's many ways of doing it. It would be a great excuse when the Director of Elections is ringing, looking for you to go out. Because I got many of them in my time. I think that will be the interest. How do we run it? I know in England and in Scotland, where they have local elections and assembly elections this year, there has been some door-to-door canvassing. Then you see other areas of the world, India, where there has been canvassing and it has led to it. So it will be done safely. It will be done safely.
Mairead, who's going to get the Sinn Féin nod there?
Well, that's a decision for the local party membership, and I'm not a member, obviously, in that area. We have lots of talented people, and I actually, I look forward to seeing who comes out of a convention and who gets that endorsement. And I'm personally very excited to see this by-election happen. I think it'll be very interesting looking at the politics of it. I do think housing, we spent the first 40 minutes of this programme talking about housing. I think personally that housing will be the big issue, the rents. And it'll be interesting to see what is coming up on the doors in relation to that. I suppose it's...
Because we do think of Dublin Bay South as a very affluent constituency, but of course it's mixed constituency.
And there's a huge amount of renters in that area as well. So, look, I think it will be very interesting. I definitely do think that housing will be the main issue coming out of it, but I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm looking forward, if we can knock on the doors. I don't know if I'll have my vaccine by then. Maybe Dara could shine light, but if we do, I'd certainly be looking forward to knocking on the doors for whoever the Sinn Féin candidate is. And we're absolutely in it to win it. So I'm very much looking forward to it.
Cian.
Yeah, well, the Social Democrats will certainly be contesting the election and we're in it to win it as well. By-elections generally are very rarely ever won by government parties. It's almost always opposition parties that win it, especially if you have a situation where a government has a stable majority as they have at the moment. I think housing will be the issue in the by-election. And I also think that
My sense in terms of housing is it's actually an issue that cuts across different demographics, different age groups. I certainly found in the election that some of the people who would have been most concerned about housing would have included, you know, older people, people who are homeowners, very concerned about homelessness, very concerned about their, you know, their grown up children being able to afford, being able to maybe move out of the home or move out of renting. So it's actually something I think that is across different constituencies, especially in more urban areas and cities where there's more higher pressures. But actually, I think it's an issue across the country.
But just interesting that you both think housing will be topping the list. But do you not think it could be a referendum on the handling of COVID?
I think it's more likely to be that, to be honest, Katie.
It's the first
Election or will be probably the first electoral test post the pandemic or mid pandemic. Depends, I suppose, where we are when the writ is moved. But I think it's more likely. I mean, you know, Dublin Bay South is a constituency, I think, where there is less of a focus on kind of local issues and more of a focus on what's happening nationally, because I suppose a lot of people who live in Dublin Bay South tend to kind of work in sort of public sector jobs and that, you know, they work in the media, for example. So I think that, you know, whilst local issues will be part of it, and housing will definitely be an issue, I think it's more likely to be a kind of a mini referendum almost on the government's performance so far. And it's a constituency where two of the three, well, in fact, the three government parties all have seats, but I mean, two of the three government parties polled very strongly, the Greens and Fine Gael, in the general election. So you'd be looking at their vote and wondering, you know, whether it will go down or up. Most likely probably go down, I would have thought. And then who stands to benefit from that?
And well, the first question is who stands? And particularly for two of those parties, have you any insight into what's going to happen in Fine Gael?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, we'll see what happens over the next. I think they've decided to pick their candidate before the end of May. And so James Gagan has declared, and then the intentions of Kate O'Connell are unclear at this point in time. And then with the Green Party, there's an interesting battle likely to develop there. Councillor Claire O'Connor has declared over the weekend on your programme, in fact, on Saturday. And Hazel Chu, the Lord Mayor of Dublin.
He's about to.
It's about to, I would have thought, yeah. I mean, she hasn't made her intentions clear as of yet, but I would be surprised if she didn't contest the Green Party selection convention. So it could be, and then it could be very interesting to see what happens off the back of that. Labour has Ivana Bacic, the senator, who a long standing senator now, who hasn't run in the last two general elections, I don't think, but did run in Dunleary in 2011 and was nearly elected there, along with Eamon Gilmore, who went on to become the Taoiseach. But I mean, Ivana Bacic has a good base in the constituency of Dublin Bay South, and I think she could be the dark horse potentially for the by-election, you know, and that would be a massive boost to Alan Kelly and the Labour Party if she were to win that. And then, you know, maybe there'll be an independent candidate might throw their hat in the ring. I mean, Michael McDougall. Manix Flynn is running. Michael McDougall, the former Taoiseach and Attorney General and former TD in Dublin Bay South, or Dublin South East as it was when he was there, lost his seat in 2007, but he hasn't made clear yet whether he's going to run or not, but you know, likely that he wouldn't, but we don't know.
And let's not forget Sinn Féin in that analysis. I mean, Chris Andrews did very well in that in the election, and as I said, we're in it to win it, and I think we're going to run a strong campaign. I'm sure we're going to have an excellent candidate, and personally I do think housing will come up on as an issue.
Lynn is being...
Well, as I said, like it literally is up to the local membership in that area. So I can't decide for them or decide who might be put forward. But I really do think that we're going to be running a strong campaign. I think we're going to be in the mix, and we absolutely are.
So in that line, would you be looking for a high profile candidate?
Well, we'd be looking to run a strong campaign and with an excellent candidate. And I'm sure we will have a first class candidate.
I mean, oppositions traditionally do very well in by-elections, Katie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Sinn Féin, yeah, they'd be looking to do quite well in the constituency. You know, they do have a TD in Dublin Bay South, and they would be looking, I suppose, to benefit off the back of what is, I suppose, perceived to be the government's unpopularity.
And we do have strong, I mean, we have Chris Andrews, we have Daniel Keating, we have two strong representatives there.
Darren, so you got them
that in. I must have, otherwise they won't speak to me tomorrow. So
I've just been handed the, tomorrow's the front page of the Examiner tomorrow, and they have that story from Derry. Sinn Féin MLAs will not contest the next election. That's the Derry MLAs, Martine Anderson and Kevin Mullen, have confirmed that they will not stand in the next Dáilmid elections. What's going on there, Marisha?
Well, look, I suppose it's quite common that parties do kind of reviews and take a look at...
this is not quite common, this scenario where two MLAs together decide their careers are over.
Well, you see, I wouldn't think that Martina Anderson would look at it in terms of career, and neither would Karen Mullen. I know both of them very well. I get on with them both very well. But Martina Anderson and Karen Mullen have been political activists all their life. They're going to continue to be political activists
in
Sinn Féin. Not as MLAs, no. But I mean, we're about a movement about change. Well, as I said, a review was done in the area to take a look at how to rejig things to put our best foot forward. I wasn't part of that review, and I'm not on the Arcordia, so I'm not privy to the information, right? But
so should it be made public, bearing in mind that the people in those areas
wonder why
their local Sinn Féin representative has decided not to stand.
It's a personal decision for Martine Anderson and Karen Mullen then whether they want to stand or not.
It was a personal decision that they both at the same time decided they didn't want to stand.
There was a review done, right, to look at their organisation, to rejig it, to revitalise it. Coming out of that review, which I genuinely don't know, but there was that the two MLAs don't run for re-election. I mean, at the end of the day, that was for them then to reflect on and to make a personal decision. Both have said they're going to remain committed Sinn Féin activists. And I really don't think that...
Isn't that a bit unsettling, though, for people, for all Sinn Féin public representatives like yourself?
Absolutely
that
not.
This call could come and a review would be done and to step aside.
Let me be very clear here, right? I'm here as a Sinn Féin TD because I fundamentally believe that Sinn Féin can deliver the change that I want to see, right? We've been talking about the housing for the last 40 minutes, right? I firmly believe that if Eoin Óibrín was housing minister, that he would sort this issue, right? That I'm fundamentally of that belief. If it was felt then that maybe it would be we'd more progress towards that if I wasn't the Sinn Féin TD, I would still be a political activist. I would still be working with Sinn Féin, trying to do that movement for change. So I think it's maybe something that in other parties is difficult to understand, because I think that some people then are in politics as a career move. I'm not. Martine Anderson isn't. Karen Mullen isn't. And they very clearly said that they are going to remain political, Sinn Féin activists, which I would have never doubted. I like both of them very, very good personally, and they're very strong women. And let me tell you, like they would have made that decision themselves.
Maybe because other parties allow the electorate to make the decision.
Well, I mean, they.
And, you know,
I think that's an unusual analysis.
The electorate.
It's not uncommon for parties to deselect candidates. Ask Maria Bailey, but I suppose people might like to know what the reasons are for this beyond a review was carried out and it was decided to be the best course of action.
Well, I think it's very clear to reinvigorate Sinn Féin in that area, to put our best foot forward for the next election.
It's not really clear at all, is it?
We are contesting this next election in the hope that we will have the role of First Minister. I mean, we have we want to deliver change on this island. We want to see a 32 county republic based on equality. We're all there for that particular thing, and let me tell you, Martina Anderson and Karen Mullen will be central to delivering that change.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Just time for one last tweet. Having late debate back on the airwaves is almost as good as getting a hair appointment. That's from Francis Byrne. Our programme tonight was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon, and Damien Chenels was on sound. I want to thank my panel for joining us this evening, and Orla Hegarty for coming on the line. And thank you all for listening. And now it's over to Colm Murray on Late Day.